Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 23, verses 1 to 12. Jesus spoke to the crowds and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and Pharisees have taken their seat on the chair of Moses. Therefore, do and observe all things whatsoever they tell you, but do not follow their example. For they preach, but they do not practice. They tie up heavy burdens, hard to carry, and lay them on people's shoulders, but they will not lift a finger to move them. All their works are performed to be seen. They widen their phylacteries and lengthen their tassels. They love places of honor at banquets, seats of honor in synagogues, greetings in marketplaces, and salutation, 'Rabbi.' As for you, do not be called rabbi. You have one teacher. You're all brothers and sisters. Call no one on earth your father. You have but one father in heaven. Do not be called master. You have but one master, the Christ. The greatest among you must be your servant. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, but whoever humbles himself will be exalted." And so, the gospel of the Lord. The scribes and Pharisees were an interesting part of society in the time of Jesus. The scribes would be something like those who were in middle management and were necessary for the well-ordered running of society. Being able to read and write, they were necessary for copying public documents and were part of the governance of their day. Kind of lawyers, I guess. They were known for study, knowledge of the Torah. They contributed to the early rabbinic movement. One could say that they were the intellectuals of their day. The Pharisees, the so-called separated ones, were a highly religious group of Jews who flourished from a century before Christ until two centuries into the Christian era. Their beliefs are characterized by free will, survival of the soul after death, and a certain system of rewards and punishments. In Matthew's gospel narrative, he seems to be recalling some hostile encounters between Jesus and the civic religious leaders of his time, as well as some of the difficulties that were being experienced by the newly formed Christian community to whom he was addressing the gospel. Observe what they're teaching, but do not follow them. Mention is made of the chair of Moses in the synagogue, but at this early time, the synagogues were really informal meeting places, and the chair of Moses is to be taken as a symbolic reference to traditional religious authority and not an actual part of the architecture or layout of the building of a formal synagogue. The scribes and Pharisees could command some respect, but something is missing. They seem to stress the formalities of religious expression to the detriment of real human spirituality. Here Matthew is not recounting a sermon, but expanding material also found in Mark and Luke. The materials provide a good background for a stern and really wonderful teaching on pride and hypocrisy and humility. But we need to be careful about how we apply this teaching, whether to distance ourselves from co-religionists who pride themselves on perfect observance, at least on the formalities of religion, or to heighten the spiritual discomfort of those who have not done very well in following any religious observance at all. Certainly, Jesus seems to be saying that some of the teachings of the scribes and Pharisees are true and worthy to be followed, but don't become like them. They stress formalities instead of being themselves transformed by religion. They use it to gain advantage over others. I don't worry too much about phony people who use fear or exaggerated orthodoxies to gain favor or advantage over others. They're already suffering because they live in an artificial world. They just aren't real, and that catches up with you to a devastating form of spiritual emptiness. I worry more about God's lowly ones who are beaten down by life and feel excluded from the finer experiences that religion can offer us as we recognize our deepest needs: forgiveness, freedom from addictions and fear, inclusion in the family of belief, service, the discovery of God in the depths of our inmost being, a sense of favor before the beauty and wonder of our God. I care deeply that people are not beaten down by religious teachings that are employed by opportunists to gain favor and advantage. Humility is a form of truth in action that should fill us with life and ensure our inclusion in the marvelous love of our God. I'm always talking about our need to go down, to become real, to be present in a natural, unaffected way, to ordinary people, yes, God's people. In a recent interview with a Michael Mead, I discovered a simple device that he uses that you might find helpful. I like it because it's simple and direct. David comes out of the 60s, and although a pacifist, finds himself working with former soldiers who have been scalded by their experiences of battle. You might find his teaching useful. I find that it resonates with my own struggles, both with humility and the desire to be fully alive. For him, the object of life is to lead us to be ready to be fully born when we die. He finds his life to be a constant mixture of youthful dreams and idealism and the knowledge that age brings. He challenges us to assume the role of the elder, the wise person who's present to people in the real struggles of life. What especially caught my attention is his simple distinction between an upward and downward movement of the soul in its journey of life. One catches the resonance here of some of the early philosophers. Fire and air rise up to the ideals of the spirit. Earth and water flow down to connect with our deepest humanity or the soul. What I love about such a teaching is that it can easily connect us with the most ordinary person or experiences. Here we're able to discover and value, even love in them, traces of the divine. That journey between liberating ideals of the spirit and grounding of experiences in our material humanity opens us out to the fullest experience of life and of God. By going down by the truth of humility, we're enriched beyond all things that are artificial, the entitlements that the Pharisees found so important. We're grounded in life. This surprise of becoming real is truly a birth to the spirit of the most extraordinary kind. Today's gospel can bring some real energy to our efforts to cut through all that is artificial and let the wonder of God's presence in the depths of our soul find real expression in practical ways. Isn't this the birth and satisfaction that all of us are seeking? Isn't this the encounter with God's graciousness that makes our spirits sing?